time for Matt Geekab, and listener, wait, which listener? Joe brings us our quick tip of the week, saying that he's had an Apple Watch since the first edition, edition zero. He says, I keep one in my exercise room and wear it during workouts. Only today did I notice a feature I never have heard about nor seen, so I'm sharing. When in exercise mode, you can swipe up on the Apple Watch and get some very timely information, real-time information, regarding heart rate and stress zone for cardio, also time, all kinds of things. He says, this is great, but who knew? So I needed to share. Thank you for sharing, Joe. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1038 for Monday, May 20th, National Streaming Day 2024. Welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where we indeed share your quick tips like that. We share some quick tips from us. We share cool stuff found that we all find. We share your questions, hopefully with some answers that we can help with. Stringing it all together into an agenda that gives us all a fantastic opportunity to learn at least five new things every single time we get together. Sponsors for this episode include ZocDoc.com/MGG, where you can go sign up for free, find a great doctor, and instantly book an appointment. And also LinkedIn.com/MGG, where you can go and post your first job for free. We will talk more a little bit about each of those later in the episode here. For now, here in Durham, New Hampshire on National Streaming Day, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I am Adam Christensen.
And here in Lee, New Hampshire, streaming to you from Lee, is Pilot Pete. The Three Musketeers ride again. We're finally back together.
Well, I know. It's like a comedy of errors.
Well, that would be the Three Amigos then, I guess.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Speaking of streaming.
Yeah. All right. So it's National Streaming Day. I figured it'd be fun to talk about what we're each watching. A couple of things it's a good conversation to have. There's so many things out there to watch I'd love to kind of talk about it. And then, of course, you folks listening, send in what you're watching. feedback@macgeekab.com. So, yeah. You want to kick us off, Adam? You got something?
Well, no, I was just Three Amigos reminded me that I had recently watched, I think it's on Apple TV Plus, if I'm remembering right, the Steve Martin documentary.
Oh,
that came out, which was excellent.
Was that good?
It was really, really good. Hopefully I'm remembering right that it was Apple one. I can't remember which service brought it out.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, it is. It's called Watch Steve. Right.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Very cool.
It's actually in two parts too. It's like his early career and then his later career. So they kind of do it in two pieces, and it's very, very good, very interesting. Huh. And they cover The Jerk and Three Amigos and all that stuff.
All right. Well, there you go. That's the first addition to the list.
Right. Perfect. Exactly. And he gives one of my favorite definitions in the world. It's his definition of a first world problem. I think my masseuse is a little chatty.
It is true.
That is a first world problem.
You know, while we're on that, though, I'll take us down to our first tangent of the day.
All right.
I would love to be able to go and get my hair cut without having to have a conversation, like an in-depth conversation with the person cutting my hair. Like, I have to prep for this. I don't want to have to prep for a haircut. Like, it's
right. Wake me up when it's over.
That's it. Yeah. I'd pay extra for the silent treatment. That'd be great. Yeah. It'd be nice. Anyway. Yeah. I don't know. So sometimes, some days I like the conversation, but some days I just want to power down, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. So do we want to go through each of our lists, or we want to round robin this? Or
yeah, round robin it. Pete, you got one to add?
Okay. I do. This one's kind of a downer, I hate to say, but I watched it, and I'm up on four. There's four episodes right now.
Okay.
I'm coming up on number four. It's it was done by CNN, but it's available on Amazon. It's Space Shuttle Columbia, The Final Flight. Yeah. So one of my best friends from flight school was Dave Brown, Dr. Dave Brown, and he was on Columbia. We went down for the launch. Thank God I didn't go down for the recovery with my son at the time. It was... but it talks about everything, to include, you know, interviews with all the family members and the engineers and the ones who were fighting. Hey, you've got to look at this thing. This is a problem. To
yeah, right.
Going, eh, it's not an issue. But oddly, the ones that said it's no issue.
Yeah, right.
Unfortunately. Had very little to say.
yeah, for sure.
But yeah. And yeah. So we were right there in the stands with the families, at launch, and it was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life. And then to lose them all like that was a real downer, like I say. But yeah, fascinating in depth as to how it all came together.
Yeah, right.
And came apart.
So. Right. Yep.
What you, Dave? Bring us back up, brother.
We have been watching. This is not on streaming though. Everything's on streaming. Like, it doesn't, right. I don't even know where things come from anymore, but, but we've been watching Tracker, which this show's fantastic. I think it's the number one show on TV given the right criteria. And I don't know what that criteria is. Like, I don't know what you include and exclude to get that. But, yeah, it's about to air its final episode, or release its final episode, whatever term we're supposed to use these days. Or maybe it did just release like Sunday night on the 19th. It released its final episode. But it's a story about a guy who basically spends his life as he does contract jobs searching for people. So if you've got a missing person, you hire this guy and he goes and finds him. And of course he's got an interesting team behind him and all this stuff. And he's in different locations around the United States. And he's sort of a loner, but not really. And there's some character development that happens, of course, but even just individually, you could drop into almost any episode of it that I've watched so far. I have not watched the season finale, but you could drop into any episode and be like, oh yeah, I get this show. Like it's fascinating and interesting, and the stories are different. And there's a nerdy guy in it that like does all of his like tech work. And so like, there's that element of it, but it's a really well done show. Both Lisa and I love it. Actually, everybody in that, like when Lucas was home, he watched an episode with us. He's like, this is fantastic.
So is it reality TV or is it fiction?
Oh no, it's fiction. Yeah. Okay. It's fiction. Okay. Yeah. There's a script and there's actors. And, yes.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's a fair question. Yeah. I think it's on CBS, but you know, you could stream it, I'm sure, from CBS. So yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Fun little show. Yep.
I'm going to give away that I watch a lot of documentaries, that like I'm big on documentary stuff. Yeah. So like the other thing I am addicted to, and then there's a new episode out tonight, so I'm excited, is Welcome to Wrexham.
Yeah.
Which is about, now I'm going to blank on Ryan Reynolds and,
Rob McElhenney.
Rob McElhenney, the other guy. They always make fun of him. But yeah, buying a football club in Wrexham, UK. And there's three seasons now. They're on the third season. And it is just fascinating to see what they're doing with this club and this old town and bringing the team along. And they also kind of go on tangents. So there's often there'll be a story kind of in the main thread of what's happening with the team. But then they also throw in these very interesting stories about different players. Like there was a whole couple episodes about the women's team, and it's fascinating, and I absolutely love it. I'm totally addicted to it. It's great. Yeah. It's on Hulu.
Yeah. We watched one season of that, and I for whatever reason I don't want to say I lost interest. It just, we never resumed it at some point. So I'm glad to hear that it's that it has continued to be good. So
Yeah,
great. Speaking of documentaries, I was on a train again last week and watched on my way back from New York. I watched a documentary that Stuart Copeland, drummer from The Police, put out called Everyone Stares, The Police Inside Out. He was always into like capturing things. And so even in the very early days of The Police, he had a video camera with him and just took footage of all kinds of moments, including a lot. He clearly got into a habit of walking on stage every night with the camera in his hand. You'd see Stuart and Sting and Andy, you know, kind of walking on stage in front of him. He would like take a quick shot of the crowd and then hand the camera to someone, his drum tech or, you know, road manager or something, as he got behind the kit and sort of wave and start the gig. It's interesting to see the size of the crowds evolve throughout the beginnings of their career, but also a lot of the behind the scenes stuff. And he assembled this, I think, with one of his brothers, you know, that helped him kind of produce it and put it all together and string it into a tellable story. And it was really well done. Fascinating. Obviously, I'm a drummer. I'm a Police fan. And I'm also, like you, Adam, a fan of just documentaries that are, you know, that kind of give you an inside look at things. And so all of that put together, I wasn't sure how much of it I'd watch. And I was like, I ravenously just watched the whole thing. It's not that long. It's maybe 80 minutes or something. So. Yeah.
Now I have to ask you, this isn't really a streaming show or anything like that, but have you seen the movie Whiplash?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a funny story about that movie. There is a moment in that movie that's very, it's a movie about a teacher, really, and a drummer in a college, I guess, college jazz band.
Yeah.
I actually knew a teacher like that. I thought they made the movie about him. They did not. Yeah, they did make it about, there was someone else that was the inspiration, but I knew someone like that. Thankfully, never really had them as a teacher, because I don't know that I'd want a teacher like that.
Yeah.
But it's about a teacher.
Or a flight instructor like that.
Or anyone. Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, he was a very demanding teacher, but there's a moment in that movie where there's a tragedy, a surprise tragedy that happens, and it's a shocking moment. And I watched it with my daughter on an airplane for the first time. And when that happened, we both screamed out, and my wife looked at us and she was like, "Nope, you can't do that on an airplane."
Right. Yeah. So people know, I mean, it's kind of a dark drama movie. I mean, like, yeah, you have to be in the right headspace, I think, to watch that. But it was, I thought it was amazing.
Oh, like, I loved it. Oh, yeah. It's a great movie. But yes, it's heavy. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So, well, thinking of dark drama, then I'll take you into the other one that I contend to this day. And it's actually two different series, but they're prequel, sequel, I guess. And then one becomes the prequel and then the sequel. It ends as a sequel. Spoiler alert. Best written show ever, I think, is Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
Now, thought you were going Yellowstone and 1883.
Also very good. Yellowstone and 1883 and 1923. Very good. Still waiting on the second season of 1923.
Well, yeah.
But Breaking Bad, I here's the thing, and I can't tell you how many people have come back to me and said, "I watched a couple episodes, I couldn't get into it," of Breaking Bad.
That's me.
And you can't. It's going to take six to get into it.
I think I watched a whole season of it, but yeah.
It's the best written series ever. The writing on it is astounding.
Yeah. Interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, cool. All right, one more from each of us, and then we got to get into quick tips here. But no, this was fun. Like, it's a fun little detour to take. Yeah. So go ahead, Adam. Yeah.
So my last one is I'm into like any streaming car show. So there's like Rust Valley Restorers, they're just any of these sort of car shows. But like my latest one actually turns out to be, I think it was originally just a YouTube show, but it's called Roadkill, and it's done by Hot Rod Magazine. Basically, they have all these shows, and now there's a million versions of Roadkill now, but this is the kind of original one. And it's these two guys, they go out and they find just cruddy, like mostly Mopar kind of muscle cars, and then just trick them out. But they don't like restore them. They just have these rust buckets and they throw massive engines in them and they just tweak them, and then they have to road trip them. They don't like trailer them or anything. They literally road trip them back home, and they break down, and it's just like about all this stuff they do. Like, they were traveling one time, I forget where, and the car had no windows, no heater, and it was like freezing cold. And so they just roll into like a gas station, and they just get like blankets and hats, like, and they're just like, yeah, going in there, like, you know, wow, if they don't have a good fuel cell, they'll just get a fuel tank and just run a fuel, you know, like a gas, you know, the red gas emergency gas can, yeah, stick it in the trunk.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
a lot,
yeah,
of times it overheats, so they have to take the hood off the front of the car, just strap it to the roof, and it has like 10 seasons. I'm working my way through it, and they get better. Like the original ones, you can tell it was really like a YouTube show.
Sure,
you know, because it kind of had that quality, and they just kind of filmed it themselves. And as it's gotten more popular, they've been able to take it further. So
that's cool.
It's a fun show.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's on Max, I think.
Okay.
It's like a Discovery kind of thing or
yep,
something.
Yep. Yep. All right. Cool. Pete, you got a...
I do. And Dave, you turned me on to this one. And folks, if you don't, you're going to be disappointed. There's only one season. But it was really well written, really well acted, and a lot of fun. And basically a look at how Saturday Night Live is made. Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Such a good show.
Oh. Really, really good show. What a disappointment that canceled. And I get it. No one's interested in, you know, what stars and TV producers in Hollywood do.
I don't think that's why it was canceled. I have a theory. Well, debuted the same time that the Tina Fey show, also about making Saturday Night Live,
yeah,
or a show like it, right?
Fair enough. Yeah.
Why can't I 30 Rock, right? It debuted, I think, in the same season as 30 Rock.
Okay.
And so I think... they're like the public chose one, but people weren't going to watch two shows about the same thing.
Right.
30 Rock was good. I think Studio 60 was so much better. And
so
of course it was. Yeah. It was written by Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah. Duh. Matthew Perry talks about it in his book. He said it's the best show he was ever involved with, which is interesting coming from a Friends star.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but go and watch it. Like we did. We just watched it recently, the whole thing, and devoured it. Like it was, yeah. Except as we got close to the end, episode 18, 19, 20, 21, whatever it was, we were like, oh, we should slow down and savor these. Like we would intentionally like set our phones far away from us so that we wouldn't be distracted and we could just like really focus and
My favorite episodes had John Goodman in it as a Nevada judge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you get disappointed with one season of that, you can get another two that I think are somewhat similar from Aaron Sorkin and go all the way back to Sports Night.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Sports Night was, I think Sports Night was his weakest work, but maybe better to say his least strong work, because it was excellent. Studio 60, I think, was better. Newsroom was better. I don't know which I like better, Newsroom or West Wing from him. I sort of go back and forth. Well, now what I have to add is nothing in comparison to anything that Sorkin has ever done. So I should stop, but I'm not going to. A guilty pleasure of ours has been watching a show on Apple TV Plus called Acapulco. It's 30-minute episodes. It's a fantastic show. Season 3 just was released. We haven't started watching season 3. We've been wrapping up like Tracker and other things. But it's a show about a guy who worked at a resort and then made a bunch of money, and we don't quite know how he made his money, at least I don't think. And he's telling his life story to his nephew, and as he tells it, you then see it dramatized. I mean, it's all drama. Like it's all fiction, but it's fun. Like I said, it's a guilty pleasure. It seems like you've watched some of it, Adam.
I've watched a couple episodes. My daughter loves it.
Yeah,
absolutely loves it. And I think she's gone all seasons. I just, you know, it's like, we're in a great time because there's this like glutton of things to watch. Like I have a list a mile long. I'm never going to get to all of it. And you know, that's on the list. And it just goes on and on and on.
What was the old song, Dave, about, you know, it's like 137 channels and nothing on? Or
yeah. Yeah. And now we have the opposite of that.
Yeah. That's quaint.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, my watch list or my two at some point I would like to watch list is, it's it's an embarrassment of riches is what
it's
it
a
really
first
is.
World problem.
It is the first world.
I've problems. Been watching that too. Soccer Hallways in the Discord. Adventures of Dick Turpin. Completely made up Adventures of Dick Turpin.
Oh, okay.
Which is also on Apple TV, which is another 30-minute comedy.
Really?
About highway robber.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So that comes from hallways in our Discord.
I'm assuming that's soccer. SCCR hallways.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Nice catch.
That's either soccer or sucker. Sacker.
Moving to quick tips.
There we go. Get us out.
Yep.
Let's get us back on track.
Grab the ripcord here. Alex shared one that this blew my mind. He says, on the iPhone, to paste text without its original formatting, it is possible to use a simple, native, and more or less convenient way. Just copy it without formatting first. Easier said than done. He says this is accomplished because most of the time when you copy text on the iPhone, it just inherits whatever the formatting is. And when you go to paste it, it inherits whatever the formatting was. And that can be a pain in the neck if you're trying to paste into an email or whatever. So he says to do this, select the when you select the text and then from the horizontal text context menu, right? There's the little ribbon that shows up after you've selected text and it says, copy and select all and all of those things that appear there. Keep going on that. Hit the little arrow and don't choose copy, but choose share. Yeah. And then in the share sheet, choose copy. And when you do that, it behaves a little differently and grabs just the text, not the with the formatting. And he says iPad OS behaves the same way. So thank you for that, Alex.
Very cool.
Yeah. Nice. It seems like you knew that, Pete, or you'd use that.
I found it after he wrote in.
Got it.
And it's like, that is, but it's well hidden. That's the thing. That little tape comes up, cut, paste, copy, shit. But the share is hidden. You got to hit the little three dots to the right and get the rest of the ribbon.
Yep.
There it is.
Yep.
Hidden in plain sight.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I want to take us to Jim, but before I do, I want to mention your opening quick tip was about swiping up on the app watch in the workout to see details. You can go into the watch app on your iPhone and go into settings on that and have the Apple Watch detect when you're working out. So if you forget to start a workout or you're out walking, it'll count. Just go into the watch, my watch tab, scroll down to workout, and you can turn on start workout reminder and end workout reminder. So it'll tell you, hey, looks like your workout's over. Do you want to end? Oh, yeah, I forgot to hit end.
I love that when I'm driving home, like if we've gone for a hike or something. It's like, I haven't. Turns out my watch knows that I'm not good at walking at 30 miles an hour. So, yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So. But then Jim sent in this quick tip. He says, hi, guys. I do a long distance lot of long distance driving, trips of 5 to 6 hours and up to 12 hours. And when I drive, I find my Apple Watch dies pretty quickly. I guess the motion of your arm that causes the wrist to raise functionality to kick in a lot more often than when I'm at home. So to save battery life, I turn off wake on wrist raise option, and I also activate the low power mode. That makes sure I have battery for the entire trip and until I can recharge when I reach my destination. I want to be sure I don't get caught without potentially life-saving features of the watch, which have bailed me out in the past. Jim, I wrote him back. I said, hey, that's sound advice, Jim, and we're definitely going to share it on the show. But the other thing I wanted to point out is several weeks ago, my sister was complaining about her Apple Watch and said she's never going to buy another one. I'm like, wait, what? What's the problem? I don't know anybody that doesn't love their Apple Watch. And she said, well, I get about 6 hours and the battery dies and it's only a couple years old. I'm like, something's wrong. I asked her if she updated the Watch OS. She looked at me like a dog looks at a clock.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Said, so I took her watch and we updated the OS and boom, she was back to normal. So I remember probably 2 or 3 OS updates on the watch back. They were having some battery issues and I think they addressed it. And so, that that fixed it for her as well. And then the other thing I do, the tip I have is at night I'll go into theater mode because I don't want the light to bother me when I wake up and, you know, I'm rolling over. And the other thing I like about that is when you're in theater mode and you hit the night light, it automatically comes on red instead of bright white. So,
yep.
But Apple, you need to go. When someone goes to the red screen on the Apple Watch Ultra, you need to be able to go to the red night light mode. You know, there's a reason I'm in red.
Pete's going to keep banging this drum. Is this going to be like iChat with Tabs was? It was a whole thing. I don't even know if you were part of the show at that point, Pete, but maybe. But we ranted about iChat needing Tabs until iChat got Tabs. And now, of course, iChat, well, it's evolved into Messages, and that's a different thing now. But
I have a feeling another thing people don't think about is, again, we talked about managing your notifications better. Like, if you have a gazillion notifications, your watch is going to be going off all the time, right? And ping and popping up stuff. And So.
I also think part of Jim's problem specifically was that it's happening while he's driving. Presumably, I don't think it's because he was like raising his wrist, maybe, but I think it's because he has a map going on his phone. That lights up the watch screen.
Directions,
So the watch isn't sleeping as much because it keeps showing the directions and tapping his wrist. It's those taps that you know, burn a lot of battery, too.
Yeah, running that little eccentric motor.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Possibly,
We had one from Jonathan, about Apple Watch battery stuff.
So he says, first, big thank you for your podcast. I've listened for years. Always helpful, informative, and entertaining, and even more so since Pilot Pete and Adam joined the team. Many thanks.
Woohoo.
I use an Apple Watch 9. It is excellent, and the battery life is so much better than my old Apple Watch 5, which was showing age and needing to be recharged several times a day. Anyway, 2 weeks ago, I suddenly found the Apple Watch 9 battery wasn't lasting. I would fully charge in the morning, and by late afternoon, it was at 16%, or overnight, it was going from fully charged to 21%. I hadn't installed any new apps, but it may well have been that in updating my iPhone 12, the watch apps had been updated. No idea. I wondered if it was hardware related, but I thought that this was unlikely, as generally hardware either works or it doesn't. So I thought it was software. I tried a normal reboot of the watch, made no difference. What I did then was a complete reset and reinstall of the watch. And in the 10 days since, it has gone back to normal with excellent battery duration. I have no idea which part of the software caused the problem, as unlike the iPhone, you can't see which apps are consuming the most power. I hope this is of help to someone. Thanks again, Jonathan.
Yeah. That's interesting. I've found that, and Apple has found this too, which is why this feature exists. If you go in the watch app on your iPhone, you can't do this on the watch, but if you go to if you're having battery life issues, go to the watch app on your phone, go to general, go to reset, and go to reset sync data. That resets, and it will tell you this, that resets the contacts and calendar sync data, which for some reason gets stuck in like a sync loop or something. And of course, when the watch is awake and syncing, the battery is going to burn faster than when it's asleep and chill. So I've certainly seen that over the years, and several times have had to hit the magic button, that magic button, and fix it. So that might have been Jonathan's issue. Like, we don't get to know, obviously, but
right. And when I read that answer from you, Dave, I went, oh, maybe even that's what happened to my sister, because when you install a new watch OS, you're resetting all this stuff.
Yes.
It may not have, in other words, Apple may not have addressed a battery issue after all, but just installing the new OS resets everything.
For sure. All right.
So speaking of reinstalling OSs, we had a question that we kind of turned into a quick tip, because I think it comes up for a lot of people. And that was, what do you do when you sell your old Mac and you want to, like, you know, get it cleaned off and ready to go? And the quick tip on this is there's actually a great article over at Apple that we'll link to in the show notes called What to Do Before You Sell, Give Away, Trade In, or Recycle Your Mac. And it covers every era of Mac. So like if you have a new modern Mac with a T2 chip, it talks about using the erase all content and settings. If you have an older Mac, it talks about all the things you need to do. They've made it a lot easier, folks, because if you have an older Mac that doesn't have those security chips and doesn't have the erase all contents and settings, you need to sign out of iTunes, sign out of iCloud, sign out of iMessage, unpair your Bluetooth devices, and then erase your Mac and reinstall the OS. And the other question that comes up related to this and the second part of this tip is if you do want to reinstall the OS, there's another article for that. And we'll link to that as well. And it's how to reinstall Mac OS. And again, it covers all the different options, including using Mac OS recovery. And also a question that I get a lot from a lot of people is where is the operating systems? And it has a link there to all of the various operating systems that you can download either from the Mac App Store. So it'll have direct links because you can't find them on the Mac App Store. If you just go there, look for them. Older OSs, you need to go right to the page. So they're still on there. This article will link you to all of them. And for ones that aren't on the Mac App Store, it also has downloads going all the way back to Mac OS 10.7 Lion. So.
All right, look, we all know that life is full of compromises, like choosing that budget-friendly apartment, even though your upstairs neighbor thinks they're the next Ringo Starr at 2 a.m. Wait, how did ChatGPT know I was a drummer? Anyway, or hitting the only grocery store in walking distance, despite them being out of, well, everything. But let's be real, when it comes to your health, no way we're settling. I mean, who wants to sit in a doctor's office while they scroll through their family drama on WhatsApp instead of listening to you? Not me. That's why I like to use ZocDoc. It's where I find top-notch doctors who actually focus on my health instead of, you know, their crossword puzzles. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Seriously, you find the doc, click to book, and you're set. No more awkward phone hold music while trying to make an appointment. And these doctors, they've got real verified reviews from actual patients, so you know they're legit. Most appointments are available within 24 to 72 hours. Same day? Sometimes, yeah. And with tens of thousands of doctors to choose from, it's healthcare on your terms, which is how it should be, right? I use ZocDoc because it just makes sense. And if you care about your health, and I know you do, try it out. Don't get caught with less than best care when you can have the best at your fingertips. Go to ZocDoc.com/MGG and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/MGG. ZocDoc.com/MGG. And our thanks to ZocDoc for sponsoring this episode. All right, MGG family, if you've ever tried hiring for your tech-savvy team, you know it's like searching for a rare discontinued gadget. Nearly impossible, right? Well, not with our sponsor, LinkedIn Jobs. I used it to find our own social media wizard, Sadie. She's the genius behind all those clips and tweets that you can't stop watching and sharing. Here's the scoop. LinkedIn Jobs isn't just any job board. It's like the secret level in your favorite video game, unlocking professionals you won't find anywhere else. Seriously, over 70% of LinkedIn users aren't even peeking at other job sites each month. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're practically playing hide and seek without knowing it. And let's talk speed, because in tech, speed is everything, right? An astounding 86% of small businesses snag a qualified candidate within just 24 hours on LinkedIn. It's like hitting the fast forward button on your hiring process. Plus, LinkedIn is constantly leveling up. They've even added a new feature that helps you craft those job descriptions faster than you can say, download update. It's tailor-made for us tech heads who need to get back to, well, all the other things that we do. So, if you're wearing too many hats and need to find the perfect fit for your team fast, remember, don't get caught in the slow lane of hiring. Zip on over to LinkedIn Jobs. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/MGG. That's right. LinkedIn.com/MGG to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And hurry. Your next great hire is just a few clicks away. And our thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring this episode. All right. Time to do some questions, maybe?
Yeah, Pete and Dave. William has a question about Spotlight. He says, I have a relatively new Mac Studio M2 Max, and I find my Spotlight searches stop working from time to time. I have rebuilt the index multiple times, and it continues to lose its memory. I have just initiated a sudo mdutil-e/command again. That's, again, rebuild thing. And have also used Onyx to perform these tasks. Do you have any suggestion on how to fix this once and for all, or at least make it so it might not happen again in a few days? Much thanks. Keep up the good work, and don't get caught, Will.
So, maybe. maybe. In digging in, we have heard this from some of you, right, that are having, and this isn't necessarily new, but it hasn't gone away, that some folks just have Spotlight kind of go sideways every now and again. The first question that I asked, and I asked this of William, was, you know, what do you think the cause is? And the reason I asked that is, because I ask that of myself too when I'm having a computer issue. It's the trust your gut kind of factor here. We all know our computers. We use them all the time, and whether we've stopped to think about it or not, we become aware of the things that we do that cause us, you know, pain in response, right? Like, you know, well, I don't launch that app when I'm doing this because it's going to slow everything down. Or it's like, okay, well, wait, you know that. Have you thought about asking why? And is that normal? Right. And a lot of times we don't. We just learn to avoid these things. We naturally go around them. So I always ask, okay, are there things that you think might be causing this, or are there things that you avoid? And in asking that, I said, and if not, well, you've got Onyx, and so you've tried erasing the Spotlight library, which is what that command you read does, right? It erases it, which then forces a rebuild. So it's being rebuilt, but something's getting repopulated in there that's causing it to, you know, like bork, for lack of a more technical term. And so I said, well, why don't you also try deleting mail indices, right? Which Onyx will let you do. And because those will feed Spotlight in some ways, and like that could be a thing. And he's like, well, I don't use mail. I was like, oh, well, then maybe all the more reason to delete mail's indices, because if you don't use it and you haven't used it in years, those mail indexes might be sitting there, and like that might be where the problem sits. And because mail's not even running regularly, they're basically sitting in stasis, right? And he's like, oh my gosh, you're right, because I used to use mail years and years ago, but I haven't launched it in a long time. I'm like, yeah, okay, blow those indexes away and see what happens with Spotlight from there. But, you know, thinking about those kinds of things, what is feeding Spotlight in these scenarios? Because clearly something is feeding it bad juju. So, I don't know. That's my thought on it. So
makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Kiwi Graham had a couple points in Discord. You know, this is, you know, check the Spotlight logs. He said, see if eclectic tools help, and it may point to a problematic file. He said he's seen Spotlight just give up when it has a problem.
Yes.
So, you know, yes. Third party Spotlight indexers may be bad too. He also says if they don't use mail but use Outlook, it's really bad with Spotlight.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah.
That I'm not aware of, but.
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks, Kiwi Graham. That's
yep. I like that.
Good thought to think about. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I don't know which of Eclectic Light's tools would be the right one to use for Spotlight. I'm on their site right now. And basically see one called Spotcord, which is build vocabularies of spotlight keywords, and then search key and search key light to add metadata. So I'm not sure they have a tool for us specifically here, but maybe just their log looker tool might be, you know, might be the, or log parser tool might be the other way to do it. So yeah. Yeah, but console too, right? Look at your spotlight logs there, and that's a great idea. Yes.
Well, cool.
Interesting. All right. Now I need to find Greg's, because that we're doing that one next, I'm told.
Yeah.
Yeah. Greg has a really quick question. How do you scroll to the first message in mail on an iPad, Pete?
You can't. You have to swipe. Just kidding. So if you're way down, you've got the mailbox open on your iPad and you're way down, many, many messages down, rather than swipe over and over and over to get to the top, just go up and touch the little blank space above the word inbox. Or if you're in archive, whatever mailbox you're in, touch the little blank space above it. It automatically whips it to the very top message. So.
Yep. Yeah. I was blown away the day that I learned that tip.
Yeah.
I'm not embarrassed to say this. I think it was within like the last 5 years, maybe even the last three years that I learned that tip.
So that's a twofer. That's a question answered and a quick tip in one.
That's right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Moving on to Perry's question.
Yeah, Perry says, I have a question, another mail question. In mail, my name is displayed differently in the messages list than it is in the full message view. My preference is what's showing in the full message view, but I have no idea how it got the version that it displays in the messages list. I have it correctly listed in the mail settings for my iCloud account. How do I get the name displayed correctly in the messages list? And how do I know how it appears for recipients? I am running Sonoma 14.4.1 and the latest Apple Mail on a MacBook Air M1. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. So there are a few places from which mail will ingest these names that it puts in the messages list. The first is one of them is the contacts app. So go into the contacts app, search not for your record, but for that email address, and make sure you don't have multiple records for yourself or for that email address in there. Again, just to make sure that, you know, because it's going to try and relate it. It's doing a reverse lookup is perhaps a good way to look at it, right? It's taking your email address and looking. So you want to look that way too. The next place to look, and this is where I think you're probably going to find your answer, is in mail's previous recipients list, which is in the window menu. If someone sent an email to you and named you as this erroneous name, then mail will sort of inherit that use of the name and email address and identify you that way. And again, you go to window previous recipients, and it's kind of a long list, but you can filter it. So again, filter it by the email address. And I would remove everything here for that email address. Let mail redefine what that is, which hopefully will come from the contacts app. And there's just a little remove from list button. So that should help. Although if somebody sends you an email down the road where it's misidentified and you wind up replying to all or something, mail will potentially do this again. Is what I need to tell you. As for how it appears to recipients, the first place to look for that would be mail accounts, and then choose the account in question, and then look at the email address field there, because that will have your name and your email address, how mail bakes it into the message that it's sending. That doesn't mean that's how other people are going to see it, because if they have a previous recipient's entry on their computer where they're reading it, it's going to potentially use that instead of what you've sent it. So like, there's no way to ensure that people get it the right way, but you can at least seed the right thing out there into the world. So.
Yeah. Also, depending on how they might have your name in their contact card, right?
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That guy that won't stop emailing me, you know.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's reserved for Pete, so, you know, yeah.
Yeah, you know, chowder head.
That previous recipients thing is a good thing to know about. People get caught by that one all the time. Like, that's a classic, you got caught, because I get questions from people like, why do I have this weird name for this person in my mail? And it's like, well, let me tell you about previous recipients.
I feel, and I'm going to say this, I feel like that causes more harm than good.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced of that, though, because I have yet to live. Well, you know what? I have lived in a world without previous recipients because I use Thunderbird. Right. And I don't get this BS anymore. So, yeah, I think that does cause more harm than good.
I would like to know it'd be nice to talk to the engineer or that kind of came up with that, find out what was the rationale or thought process for it.
Well, I think maybe we can answer that question, because the idea of remembering all the people to whom you've sent mail so that it can auto-complete that for you when you're typing a new message, that's handy. But I think that needs to live in an isolated little thing that's only used for when I'm composing a new message. Don't use that data for any other reason, and that might be the benefit there.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing about that, though, that been around for forever, that might have been old thinking that's just never been replaced, because back in the day, machines weren't quick and fast and like have all this extra processing power. Like, it could actually just in real time these days probably go through and build that list, you know, through your email.
Yes.
Like, it probably doesn't need to be a separate index anywhere anymore.
Right.
Oh, yeah. 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 We don't know when it's updated, what triggers an update. And you'll find six entries for the same email address in there. And it's like, okay, well, you're only ever going to pick one. So why are you leaving six in here? Delete five of them. Yeah.
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 Totally.
Yeah. Dave, something you kind of blazed over there at the very beginning with talking about contacts, and realized that if you do that reverse lookup and you have several contacts in there, you can look for duplicates. There's actually a menu item in contacts, look for duplicates, and then you can merge them all and fix that name issue too. Yeah. So, yeah.
Great point.
But I don't think, you know, in this case, it doesn't sound like that's what it was. I think it's more of the other, not
the previous recipients.
Recipients that are.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Like you, Adam, that's my default answer now for why is mail display this wrong? Because it's problematic.
I've got some of my accounts on Thunderbird now and some on mail. I need to get completely away from mail. I'm just really? So used to the way mail presents that it's hard for me to get out of that mode. But I know once I get into Thunderbird, I think it's a hands down better client.
It is, except I got two problems with Thunderbird. And one of them is that just it doesn't feel like a Mac app. Right.
Right.
And doesn't have Apple script support. So like that is more of an issue than it sounds like. It sounds like it's only a nerd issue. You can't drag an attachment onto the Thunderbird icon and have it create a new email because it doesn't have Apple script support. Like, that's how that's done. So those kinds, it's frustrating. Right. The other thing that I need to do is the formatting that it wants to put me into when I start composing an email is bizarre. And I wish I could just tell it to stop that. And I might be able to. So I need to look at that in the templates. But I've been on Thunderbird for, what, 6-8 months now? I'm very used to it. I can't wait to be able to go back to mail someday.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then there's another client, Canary Mail.
Yep.
Have you played with that at all, Dave?
A little. Yeah. I have higher hopes for Mail Maven, which is the thing that is coming from the folks who used to make all the plugins that I liked for mail from Small Cubed. So, but it's not out yet. So, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So. Is there a projected Have you talked to them?
I don't know.
Can you tell? Can you say if you have?
I don't know. I don't know. Wait. You don't know. Say. I don't know. Okay.
Don't say none of that.
I don't know. Right. Do we have another question?
We move on to Richard's question. Because I bet you know the answer to this. Richard wrote in. He said, "Hi guys, I have heard you talk about tail scale a few times, and I'm still confused. What I believe that I understand is that tail scale creates a VPN between your devices, and instead of routing info through a VPN servers, it uses my computer as the server. What I don't understand is, does this protect me on a public Wi-Fi network, like a restaurant, airport, hotel, etc.? Sorry for being dense about this, but I am confused." Okay, Richard, love the show, a weekly listener for years. Richard, don't be sorry for being dense. It's what I do best. And we wouldn't have a show if everybody wasn't a little dense at some point in time here. You know, I mean, we'd just be three guys sitting here talking for no reason. So. Yep.
And we're all dense at times too. Like we're all in this together. Your question, Richard, is a great question, because it is confusing, and also because the overly simplified answer to your question of does it protect me is best stated as no, yes, and maybe. I'm not going to leave us there.
And but, don't forget sometimes.
Yeah, right. Like that. Yeah. And so I think we need to dig into what tail scale is. And I understood this, but I did not know how best to present it. So I actually employed my friendly assistant, ChatGPT, to help me come up with the right terms to use to describe tail scale and to think about tail scale. So this, what I'm about to share is something that is a collaboration between me and the AI, right? Because first and foremost, tail scale, the way I want to think about it for now is that tail scale creates a mesh network of sorts. What that means is each of your devices logged into your tailnet, so logged into tail scale, running the tail scale client, can connect directly to each other without needing to be on the same network, nor to have all your traffic routed through a central VPN server. So it's like you're all on the same local network in terms of how you can just connect to each other, but you don't have to be. And that's the main use case of tail scale, is having this group of your devices, and it can be shared in a company if you want, like you can go pretty wide with this, but having a group of your devices that all can just see each other as though they are local all the time, no matter where any given device might be at that point
in
time.
No opening ports, no port forwarding. No.
Exactly. Right. It's all right. Magic. It's, yeah. it's using WireGuard at its core, yeah. But, to dig in a little deeper, all that traffic is encrypted and secure regardless of where any of your devices are. Because the traffic between your devices is always encrypted and protected. That means when you're on a public Wi-Fi network, yes, you are protected as long as you're talking to one of your other devices. But if you're just visiting your bank, that's not by default, that's not going through your tailnet. And so that traffic is visible by the local network that you're on. Now, that traffic to your bank is also going to be encrypted between you and your bank, but they'll be able to see that you're visiting your bank. That's as far as it can go, right? Like they can see the address you're doing. That's all by default. So there's no traffic anonymization that a normal VPN might bring when you're using tail scale. You can, however, designate one or more devices on your tailnet as an exit node. What that means is you can route traffic through it so long as that device is turned on. And wherever that device is, that's where your traffic will appear to have come from. So I leave one of my disk stations here on my local network as an exit node, and I can turn that on and route through it, and it works great, sort of great. I want to put an asterisk on that and come back to it. But that's how It works. So it is a mesh. Think of it as a network mesh, not a mesh network because it's not Wi-Fi, right? But it is this, you know, it's this distributed LAN, if you will. But that starts getting really confusing. Like, what the heck does Dave mean when he says distributed LAN? So that's why I like this mesh idea. Everybody's talking to each other no matter where they are, so long as they're logged into your tailnet. So,
yeah. So, I just want to point out a couple things. And the way to do that is you go to your little tail scale icon up in the menu bar, assuming you put it up there. And the pull down is you go to exit nodes, and then you can click run exit node. And that's when that machine becomes an exit node.
Yes.
I have one on my Mac Mini in the basement that's always sitting in the basement. And right now I have none selected. But when I go out and I want to appear to be from home, I go into this tail scale drop down menu and then go to exit nodes and click on Mac Mini. And then I route all my traffic through there. So that's how you do it physically.
Yeah.
But this is still, in a word, genius.
I do want to share. I mentioned I was in New York last week and I wanted to watch the Bruins game from my hotel room. And
not
so
from there, you don't.
Well, but I have channels, right? So I can stream from channels. No problem.
Yep. Yeah.
I did a speed test before I started any of this. I was getting whatever. It was fast. It was like 50, 60, 80 megabits down or something. So way more than I needed for the, you know, whatever, the 8 megabit stream that channels wanted to send me. And yet I saw that channels was like struggling and defaulting to transcoding it down to like 3 megabits per second. I'm like, why is this? And I realized it was because I was connecting to channels through my tailnet, which meant it just, by nature of what it did, it was using tail scale going through one of my disk stations. I wasn't using it as an exit node, but because my channel server sits on my local network, I was connecting to it as its local IP. And so it was just like, yeah, I'll use tail scale. Like, that's the path that my iPad, which is what I was watching on, knew to use to go and get to that device. It was like, this is how I route to that, which is fine, but it was slow. And so I turned off my tailnet and connected remotely to my channel server, and everything worked fine. So there's something inefficient about, and it might be the disk station that I was routing through, the way tail scale is built for that might be inefficient or something, right? I can't tell you what it was, but I turned it off and I was able to get, you know, full speed stream, which meant like scrubbing around through the thing happens sort of instantaneously, because if you're trying to scrub around when it's transcoding, it sucks. So just bear that in mind. Again, this is something almost certainly specific to my setup. I don't want to say unique, because any one of you might be running into this, but just be aware of that speeds when you're going through tail scale as an exit node or kind of as a default router in a scenario like this, because I have mine set to allow local network traffic. So it essentially uses it as an exit node for local traffic only until I turn it on for an exit node for everything. So it's not the fastest thing. But it is very convenient and very functional. So hopefully that helps. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Where are we on time here? I want to take a minute. It's been a couple of weeks since we've thanked all of our premium subscribers who have contributed recently. And so I want to take a minute and do that. Again, this is, as I always say, this is very much welcomed, but certainly not mandatory nor necessary. It in aggregate, it really truly is a vital and therefore necessary part of how we are able to continue to bring the show to you. But it is not necessary for any one of you to do this, but it is extremely appreciated. And you can learn more at macgeekgab.com/premium. And with that, I want to thank the following people for $10 contributions in the last couple of weeks here. Timothy in West Windsor, Neil in West Hartford, Frank in Voorhees, Frank in Tunbridge, Brian in Southbury, Phil in Summers, Abel in Santa Rosa, I lost my place. James in San Antonio, Cal in Russellville, Santiago in Palm City, Corey in Midlothian, Nick in Marquette, Warren in Gloucester, Donald in Furlong, Jeremiah in Edgewater, Mark in Coopersburg, Chris in Charleywood, Scott in Bourbonnais, and Wagner in Allen. And then thanking Bob in Lepesh and Gilberto in Aguas Calientes for $15 contributions.
Hot water.
Hot water indeed. Yeah, no, we're all in good water here.
Aguas Calientes is hot water.
No, I know. Sorry. I'm just saying we're not in hot water here.
There you go. Right.
He's in hot water, but he's in good company. Yeah. Yes.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Thanking Brian for $25 contributions now. Thanking Brian in Walton Hills, Robert in Paso Robles, Craig in New Lambton, Jim in Myrtle Beach, Charles in Midlothian. Interesting. Daniel in Levittown, Gary in Houston, Thomas in Gardner, Peter in Fort Myers, and Scott in Columbia. Thanking Harry in Canyon Country for a $30 contribution and Daniel in San Diego for a $50 contribution. And truly thank you to all of you for listening to the show, sharing the show, contributing your questions, just being a part of the Mac Geekab family. Not only is that a huge part of what keeps the show going, it's also just an awesome thing to be a part of. So thank you for that. Yeah, it's truly an honor and a pleasure to be able to do this. Yeah, it's awesome. We've got a couple of cool stuff found. Are there one of those questions lingering that we might want to answer?
We got the one about how to watch TV from overseas, and you already kind of answered it from how to watch from New York, which is just like being overseas, except different.
That's fair.
Right.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You can't do it on your iPhone or your iPad using one of the services. That they're going to geolocate you and shut you down.
Yes.
Get channels, get it on your disk station, get it on a server in your basement or wherever you're computer equipment is located in your house, and then you can watch it from everywhere and anywhere. Channels is $79 a year, I think.
Right? Yeah, it is a little nerdy to set up, for sure.
But even I did it, Dave. So it's
it's true. Hey, you asked me. This is totally fine. Pete winds up. I become Pete's sort of first. I don't want to say first line of tech support, but I am one of the first people you will call if you can't solve a problem on your own. And that's fine. Like, we all call each other. It's totally, like, it's great. Yeah. There are certain things you call me about all the time. You've never called me about channels.
Yeah. It's nerdy, but it's not impossible. It's pretty good setup.
Yeah.
I have had you help me with channels on how to get TV everywhere to work properly and,
maybe
deal with some of that.
The NBC stuff.
Yeah,
that,
NBC stuff got NBC got shut everything down.
Yeah, that's the NBC's
fault. Password access. Yeah,
exactly.
It's not channels.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, that's true. I forget that I was able to work around that with that weird Docker thing. If somebody wants to know, I'll put a link in the show notes to channels. It's the Fubo Docker thing. You have to have a Fubo account to do it the way I'm doing it anyway. So. Go ahead.
And then the other question was Chris's, how to get, he said it autoplays when he connects on Bluetooth, and how do I get it to stop? And my solution was create a shortcut. Oh, good God.
Everything all right there, Pete?
I'm not that tired. Why am I forgetting words, right? I don't know how to do it. But
Chris's problem is that every time he connects to his car with Bluetooth, it starts auto-playing music, right?
Yeah.
And it drives him crazy.
Yeah. And so I said, come up with a shortcut and, go create the shortcut that basically says add action, search and select pause in Apple Music.
Is that doable? Have you tried that? Have you built that shortcut?
Because I don't have that problem, no.
Okay.
I haven't tried it, but But I, in looking through shortcuts, you can pause Apple Music.
Okay.
And if you disable Ask Before Running, the shortcut should run automatically.
That's really interesting. Huh.
You know, create a personal automation.
Yeah, so it'll start and then it'll pause.
Yeah, scroll down, you know, select Bluetooth and choose your car's Bluetooth from the list, and then add the action and say, pause Apple Music and run it without asking, should I pause?
That's a great, I'd be curious to test the implementation of that, because that that's brilliant. Oh, I like that idea.
That's me. Brilliant.
That, yeah. No, I like that's the beauty of what we do here is the collaboration, because I don't know why I would never have thought of a shortcut, but I certainly, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that, Adam?
No, but he had another question in there, or mentioned that he has a VW, a 2020 VW, that when it starts, it'll start playing, but the audio is muted on the stereo. Oh. And I actually had this over at the MacCast. Somebody, same thing, VW, and did a little research back then. And this is like, I think, a known issue with CarPlay in Volkswagens. I don't know why, but it will go into like mute and you have to like unmute it when it auto plays.
So you could potentially miss like half of your podcast that you were listening to because it just resumes playing and you have no idea.
Yeah. And I don't know what causes it or what does it.
What?
Or doesn't. Some people have suggested like firmware updates for your head unit and your VW. Like if it's the stock unit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know. I don't know why Volkswagen said, I don't know why it's an issue, but I've had this question a couple times and it's always a VW.
Well, I wonder if the same shortcut would work, because there is a trigger for when connected to CarPlay, do X. So I wonder if the solution could be when connected to CarPlay, pause the audio. The same thing, right? Like you could have literally the same shortcut that Pete talked about, but you know, do it all for Bluetooth and for CarPlay, and that way it pauses the audio and at least you're not rolling.
Yeah, now that I'm saying VWs, I think also occasionally BMWs have had this issue too.
Oh, interesting.
But I think they're
so it's the Germans' fault.
VW and BMW, they have
it is the
a relationship.
Fault. Yeah, we're not making that the title of the episode.
Yeah,
no.
You need a new car. Yeah. That's all.
You need a new car.
German engineering.
German engineering. Yeah, exactly.
So actually, Paul Conaway points out that, you know, CarPlay tries to restart the previous audio, and that's I find that to be true too.
Yeah.
I'll get in if I've been listening to something on there, then Overcast, then when I get in the car, it automatically starts playing.
For sure. Yeah. So I wonder if this shortcut. Because you're right. If it's doing it with music, that's one thing. But can you just tell it to like pause everything? You know, like pause Overcast, pause, because there is a, I guess you could do, yeah, so, huh, there is a media play pause action here, so I wonder, what does this do? Plays or pauses the currently playing media, so I wonder if that would impact a third party app like Overcast. And then the only thing you might have to do in the shortcut is add a delay in, because if it, depending on when your phone starts playing when it's connected to CarPlay or Bluetooth, right? We've established that fact. So, but the question is, how long after it's connected does the phone start playing versus how long after it's connected does the shortcut run? Because what you might do is start it playing with the shortcut, because the shortcut doesn't have a pause action. It has a play pause action. So it's a toggle. So you might need to put a delay in your shortcut. You'd have to experiment with this, right? So that the pause is happening after it started playing, not before.
Yeah. So give it 5 seconds or so.
Yeah, but it would be nice to get it as tight as possible that you're not getting blared at, you know, because otherwise then you'll reach for the volume knob and pause it, and then suddenly it'll turn back on when your shortcut runs.
Yeah.
So
I think another thing related to this that I've read, and I've not tested this or tried this myself, but it's my understanding that one of the reasons this happens is because if you're like me and you're in the car and you're listening to something, right?
Yeah.
You get where you're going you just turn off the car,
correct,
which then pauses your audio and, you know, disconnects everything, right?
Yep.
I've heard that if you pause the music first before you turn off the car, the next time you get in, it will know that you deliberately stopped the music. See, because what's happening is it's the theory is what's happening is it's assuming you were listening to this. Next time you get in, you want to resume listening to it because you didn't stop it before you left.
Yeah. Resume.
Again, I don't, I've just been told that as a solution. I have not personally tested it because I actually like that feature. I listen to music and CarPlay on my, in my car all the time. And I love it when I get back in and it just starts up where it left off the last time I was in the car.
Yeah. Yeah, it does remind me of a George Carlin skit where he talks about, you know, you're driving and it's raining and the windshield wipers are going, you got the radio on and everything's good and going, and, you know, you turn the radio up and you're listening and you're good to go and you park and you get back in your car and you start your car and the radio is this loud, you know, because so I, it would be nice. My, I had a BMW for a little while. I've got a Subaru now, but I had BMW for a while. And I think it was the BMW that the volume would sort of sweep up from zero to wherever it was previously. So yes, you had a chance to like, nope, stop here kind of thing, or no, that's too loud, and you would grab it. It was a, natural kind of reintroduction to things.
Right. And some of them have audio volume based on your speed and how much wind noise.
Yes.
I forget what that's called, but that they do that.
I think I had a
they
Volvo
all implement it differently.
Yeah.
That's the thing that drives you nuts. I just went from Ford to Honda. When I turned my Ford off, I could continue to listen to something on CarPlay for several minutes if I wanted to, as long as I didn't open the door. When I opened the door, it goes, okay, he's leaving, turn it off.
You're good to go,
Yeah, as soon as you turn off the Honda, boom, done.
Huh.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. But yeah, all they all do it differently.
We have time for a couple of cool stuffs found, so let's do this, because I'm kind of excited about this one from Uncle Jamie. And I'm scrolling there and vamping. Where am I here? Yeah. So he says, I was wondering what to do if a site disappears from DNS, like the domain name expires or something like that. And he says, looking into this, I found an interesting website. And, you know, I my browser said it couldn't be reached. So I looked up, I did like a DNS lookup for it because it's a little bit nerdy, which is good, you know. And the domain had recently expired. The site wasn't fully backed up on archive.org, so what could I do? He says, my thought was that the DNS had just expired, so the site was probably still running on an IP somewhere. I just didn't know what it was. And there is a site, the cool stuff found entry, called dnshistory.org that keeps a history of DNS resolutions from the past, of course. And he says, looking there, I found the IP address of the site of interest as of just a few days ago. But of course, you can't just go view the IP because it's probably a virtual host kind of thing. So you have to add it to your Etsy hosts file on your Mac, which is something that if you don't know what you're doing there, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Pete, because you had an errant entry in your /Etsy/hosts file. But you can go put things in there, and then that will override whatever your Mac is going to do to look those things up. And I will try and find some instructions about like what that does. But be very aware of what you put in there. And you know what? If you're going to put something in your Etsy host file, put a calendar entry for a month from that day to remind you to go look at that Etsy host file and make sure you still want those entries in there. In fact, for nerds like me, I'm going to put a recurring calendar entry monthly to go and look at my Etsy hosts files, because as I'm saying this, I'm realizing I have no idea what I've put in there and left in there. So, yeah, maybe that's the answer, is go look at it regularly. Yeah.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, DNS history. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Here's another cool one, Dave, that I know you're going to love.
Okay.
I think I know you're going to love it.
All right.
So Jeffrey wrote in, he says, Bandmatch is an app designed to connect musicians with each other based on their musical preferences, skills, and location. It's like matchmaking service, but for musicians. Users can create profiles highlighting their musical background, instruments they play, genres they're interested in, and their location. The app then uses this information to match users with compatible musicians nearby. Once matched, musicians can communicate with each other, collaborate on projects, schedule rehearsals, and potentially form bands. It's bandmatch.app.
Oh, I'm going to install this right away. No joke. I am actively looking for another band. I still play with Bitter Pill, but yeah. The other bands that I was in sort of, they really didn't survive coming out of COVID lockdowns. It's really kind of, I mean, there's been some fits and starts with the other bands that I was in, but they never really got kicked off properly. Everybody's schedules had just kind of moved on.
So this is Tinder, but for musicians.
You said it. You found a way to say it, didn't you? He's had a note on his screen, folks, I swear, for years. How can I mention Tinder on the show?
Hey, I didn't say Grindr, you know.
Oh, you just did.
You did. Oh, parents, I'm sorry.
Boy, yeah.
Great. Well, then
Grindr,
what
it's a sandwich, it's a Subway, it's a Grindr, it's a, you know.
So thank you, Lawyer Jeff, for that one. That actually, I really will, I'm going to check out Band Match. Pete's comments, though, make what Joe shared with us very, very, very tame. But Joe said, I'm not sure if this is for the show or not. Clearly it is. It's called Zotify, and it is an app. It's a terminal app, but it will... We're going to use the term backup your Spotify music directly from Spotify to your Mac. There are some other tools out there that you give it your Spotify library, and then it will go to like YouTube and try and find those songs, those same songs, and pull them down. This actually pulls them down from Spotify, and I took a look at it. It will do it at high speed, or you can have it do it in real time. And they said to make it look more legitimate. And that is a great introduction to the piece of advice that I want to share, which falls under the don't get caught umbrella. Before you run this, familiarize yourself with Spotify's terms of service and make a decision for yourself from there. It's probably the best place to leave that, because this is a tool and there's nothing inherently wrong with a tool. But it must be used for good and not for evil,
right?
And you don't want to get caught. So, but it's good to know about. Like, it's good to know that it exists.
Right.
So, yep. So thank you, Joe. It's fascinating that somebody's created that. I mean, my guess is it acts like a Spotify client and acts like it's just playing your music and
playing your library.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just so happens to be capturing it. And again, I have not reviewed Spotify's terms of service, but please do before you employ this.
Absolutely. But I will say this, Dave. Do you use Spotify?
I am a Spotify customer, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you know you can go to a playlist and say start playing it, and you go, oh, I want this for offline. They'll let you do offline. So you hit that, and it downloads it. Bang, correct. Bang, 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 bang. So
my guess is that's what this is doing. The difference, though, is that the Spotify app only gives me access to my offline library while I continue paying them my monthly fee.
Yes.
It is my interpretation of glancing at this app's page that limitation, that restriction might not exist with the files it saves for you, because you can't get into your Spotify
once you stop
local cache and maybe you can. I don't know. I haven't tried, but you know, no, I use Spotify. I have Apple Music too. I pay for Spotify for two reasons. One, because we do this show and I like to be aware of things, but really primarily, it is what more people use that I interact with, especially on the music front. So like if I'm going to like fill in with a band or something, they'll send me a Spotify playlist of all their songs, and then I listen to that to learn the song. So it's easier to just have Spotify. It's
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Another real quick one, then. Cool stuff found is there's two channels on Sirius XM, and one is the top 1000 country and the other one is top 1000 classic rock. Two great channels. And they just play, it plays in a loop from 1000 down to one.
Yeah.
As far as they go. So,
and it, and it keeps like it, and it, it, it,
keep, it keeps updating going in a loop. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I don't, I haven't gone back to see if, you know, 663 is the same day in, day out, year in, year out, but
yeah.
It, it, you know, it goes back. It's essentially four decades of classic rock, and and probably even more than that from country, because it seems to go back to the 50s on country. But it's a nice background channel to have on if you happen to have access to
interesting
Sirius XM. Cool.
I will say Spotify. You know, it's National Streaming Day. Spotify's playlists are, generally speaking, if better than Apple Music's, for two reasons. One, they seem to just, I don't know, do it better, but they make it much easier for me to find playlists that other users have published. And there are folks who, like, are playlist influencers, for lack of a better term, right? Like, bands, if you're in a band and, you know, an original band, you're putting out your own music. A great way to get your music discovered by people is to appeal to and befriend some of these Spotify playlist creators, the people creating them, and get them to include your songs in their playlist. You'll make money from that.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So Spotify's playlists are good. The one exception to that for me is the Apple Music, you know, quote unquote essentials playlist. So if I want to listen to songs by Tom Petty, I know I can go find Tom Petty essentials and it'll be a great playlist of Tom Petty tunes. Right. But otherwise Spotify's playlists are better. Like if I want to listen, like, you know, you don't want to listen to the top country songs or the top whatever, or songs in a genre or whatever. Apple Music's very limited. Spotify's great. So anyway, that's
nice.
What I got.
Yeah. All right.
It's that time, though.
Wait, what time?
We've borrowed extra time. We need to give it back.
Yes, we have. Oh, all right.
Thanks for hanging out, everybody. Thanks to Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Thanks to our sponsors. Of course, you can see all our sponsors at macgeekab.com/sponsors. And, of course, today's sponsors were ZocDoc.com/MGG and LinkedIn.com/MGG. So go check that out too. Make sure you check out Pete's other show, So There I Was, and my other shows, Business Brain and Gig Gab, especially if you're a musician. We'll talk about Band Match on that show too. I'll dig into it and talk more about it over there. So yeah, cool. Pete, you have your hand in the air.
Oh, I did. You caught me.
Okay.
Well, for you, every one of you, don't get caught.
Made on a Mac.
Later.